Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hello, I am Guillermo del Angel, originally from Mexico City and now in Boston, Massachusetts, and you are listening to the best podcast of all, the Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you, Guillermo, who has introduced our podcast this week as somebody who backed our Kickstarter late last year, and you'll have the chance to do exactly the same thing for 2022 when we get our next crowdfunding campaign underway. I kind of feel as though, Catherine, we should be paying Guillermo for that amazing sort of plug at the start of our show.
He's done us proud there, hasn't he, Guillermo? Yes, yeah. Lovely stuff.
Amazing. How did the opening ceremony go, Catherine? Because when we last spoke to you, it was nigh.
Well, I wouldn't wind the clock back to when it was nigh, put it that way. Look, I love that I've done it. I love that I was asked to do it. I feel very honoured and privileged, and it feels like a real achievement and all of those corny things, but my golly gosh, it was hard. So hard. I've never said so many names, all of them foreign, in the space of, well, actually not a very small space, a space of about 4.5 hours. I had to have things to say about 104 different countries and their flag bearers. And for that, I required the not inconsiderable help of my Tennis Podcast family, for which I'm eternally grateful.
Mostly Matt, I should say, because I was trying to help.
David
folks
spent
as
about
well.
An hour and a half on Norway.
I kept finding out new stuff that wasn't particularly relevant, but I still
meanwhile,
couldn't.
Matt supplied me with the fact that, is it Tajikistan, Matt?
I think it's Turkmenistan, isn't
Turkmenistan.
It?
Turkmenistan has an Olympic stadium despite never having hosted an Olympics and not currently looking like it's about to host an Olympics. If you build it, though, they will come. They've definitely heard that saying.
Marvellous. You seemed, Matt, I have to say, to be having the absolute time of your life preparing for Catherine's opening ceremony with her.
I loved it. I was in my element. I had music on and I was finding obscure facts about some obscure countries. It was really great.
I should say she did an excellent job, folks, if you didn't get to hear it. And she'll be even better next time because she'll be doing the closing ceremony. And she's doing all the days in between as well. So you did know about that, didn't you, Catherine, before I mentioned it?
Oh, definitely know about it.
Right,
yeah.
Good. Okay, well, yeah. You'll be even better next time. The Olympics is a few days underway. I think the thing that struck me most from a tennis perspective has been the heat. And I should have known what to expect, but it still took me by surprise, just on day one in particular, how much it impacted the matches and impacted players who I wasn't necessarily expecting it to impact quite so dramatically. And the heat there in Tokyo at this time of year appears to be, I'm trying to think of a comparable, really, for what it's doing to the players. Maybe I've seen Washington at this sort of time of the year really hurting players. But, I mean, Djokovic, we know, suffered in the heat before. He still won 6-2, 6-2 in the match itself. But he didn't look comfortable. And Daniil Medvedev was the one you caught, Catherine, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, after his win over Alexander Bublik in the first round, which was not epic, but quite fun, I think would be how I'd describe that. Certainly not a tremendous letdown, as previous meetings might have been. Yeah, he said it was pretty much the worst conditions he'd ever played in, heat and weather-wise. He said, look, I'm not complaining about it. It's part of the deal, but it is awful, which I found to be very relatable comments. Yeah, I think Washington's quite a good comparison, sort of US Open, even some of those really oppressive days and evenings you get at the US Open. And I think because the humidity, it's not letting up that much in the evening and at night, I really think these conditions are going to be a tremendous factor in how the medals are decided. It's completely oppressive. The British cyclist that won the mountain bike gold today, Tom Pidcock, he said after his gold medal win that he thinks what made the difference was that he spent the last few months specifically training for these heat and humidity conditions in Tokyo. For 45 minutes after every single one of his standard training sessions, he then has gone into a special tent to recreate hot and humid conditions, and he cycles for 45 minutes extra in the humidity, and that's won him a gold medal today. I mean, there you have it. So yeah, I think it's Matt was grimacing throughout that, and I could not share that facial expression more.
Matt shaking his head throughout that answer.
I would love a gold medal, but
not
some prices are too high to pay.
Yes. And actually, I've heard, I think after that first round match you mentioned, David, Djokovic put out there, you know, should we be thinking about playing at a different time of day? And I know they've started the triathlons really early in the morning, yeah, haven't they, to try and combat that heat and just get it done before it does get really hot. But I think you're right. I think with the humidity, it's actually not going to make that much difference if they're playing at night. And for Medvedev, that was a really good win, I felt, because I didn't think he had anything left. I think he knew he had to win that in two sets against Bublik, which therefore made the fact that he did manage to get it done in two sets all the more impressive with that pressure on his back. But yeah, definitely the heat and humidity is affecting these matches and the outcomes of these matches, I think.
And what is this rule that they brought in almost overnight? I think from yesterday, didn't they? They had a day to digest these complaints, and then they brought in a heat rule, an extreme heat policy. What's changed now?
I think they get a 10-minute break after the second set if it goes to a decider, if the extreme heat policy is in place, and I think it comes into effect at a certain temperature, right? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common in tennis, that, isn't it? As you said, we've seen it elsewhere, but yeah, it's a recognition. These are tough conditions.
Mm. Yeah, I think they probably did the right thing there. So in terms of the matches that we've actually seen and where we are now, we're a couple of rounds into the Olympics tennis draw. The most wildly anticipated arrival onto the court really was that of Naomi Osaka. And that was preceded by the fact that she ended up lighting the torch, lighting the final, the Olympic flame. And that is a moment I think that will stand long in the memory. First tennis player ever to light the flame at the Olympics. And this came as a surprise, really, didn't it, Catherine? Because I think she was actually on the order of play for the opening day, and then late on, she was suddenly shunted off to the next day.
Yeah, which was a real dummy hand they gave us. I can't believe that wasn't a deliberate sleight of hand by the organisers. I mean, very well played. And I've had some insight into the lengths that are gone to, you know, protect some of the more high profile elements of, you know, the ceremony, so that they do have these big reveals. But I couldn't believe that Naomi Osaka wasn't going to be involved in that opening ceremony in some way. So it was a huge surprise. The biggest surprise for me was to see her first on the schedule on Saturday rather than to see her eventually lighting the cauldron in the Olympic Stadium. As the ceremony was just about to begin on Friday, we had the news circulating that Osaka had been withdrawn from the schedule on Saturday and replaced on centre court with Iga Swiatek. And at that point, it seemed pretty clear to me that she must be involved in the ceremony. And then when I went through the running order and sort of filled in the information that we'd received that morning, there was only one name left blank, and that was who would be lighting the cauldron. And there was only one obvious name not yet included, and that was Naomi Osaka. So though we couldn't announce it at the start of the ceremony, at that point it did seem pretty clear to me that that's what she would be doing. And yet still, that moment when the six school children who were carrying the torch prior to her, when they lit her flame and she's standing there with that completely unassuming expression on her face that is the exact same expression she has when she comes into press conferences and wins titles and gives interviews and is just so typically Naomi Osaka. Still, that moment was extremely arresting, and it took me a few moments to really think about it, because I was so sort of in Olympic brain. It took me a few moments really to digest it with tennis brain and the significance of it for tennis and how enormous that really is. I mean, those moments are truly iconic. People still think about and talk about Cathy Freeman lighting the Olympic flame in Sydney. Now, I know that had significance in terms of Indigenous people in Australia, but all choices of who lights the flame, I think, have significance beyond just here's a really massive celebrity that we've got that we want to show prominence to in the international community. There's always more to it than that. And Muhammad Ali lighting the flame in 1996, how iconic is that moment? So yeah, I mean, her comments afterwards on social media about the significance of it to her, I think, completely captured it. You know, the greatest honour she can imagine, I think. And it's hard to digest, really. I think, you know, we'll look back on that in many, many years to come. It was incredible. And I love that she was just sort of wearing sportswear. She was so unjazzily dressed for like the jazziest moment of anyone's life. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and it made me realise this was her first public appearance in weeks. I mean, I think her Netflix documentary had come out. She'd done some magazine covers that had been released in these last few weeks. You know, we'd heard from Naomi Osaka. We had seen her, but this was her first public appearance. And suddenly she was just there, and it was so powerful when you know, as we do to some extent, what she's been going through in those, I think, 57 days it had been since we'd seen her at the French Open. And you know, I wasn't entirely sure through the French Open and through Wimbledon that Naomi Osaka would play the Olympics, just not knowing how she was. And then you get there and she damn well is the Olympics, and that was just such a powerful moment, and yeah, just a super cool one for tennis as well that we will look back on.
Did you know that it was going to be her lighting the flame officially, even before you saw clapped eyes on it, Catherine? Or, I mean, obviously you've guessed by this point. You didn't know.
No, I didn't know officially. No, and I think that's why it's still... I mean, I was absolutely assuming it was her. I hadn't even really run through in my mind other candidates for who it might be. And yet still, that moment when she appeared was really quite something. Hmm. Yeah, that'll live with me for a long time.
There's a great contrast, isn't there, between the lack of emotion she shows facially in that moment and what she said afterwards. And I'm sure it's all in there, you know, all the feelings at the time. But her actual words on social media, undoubtedly the greatest athletic achievement and honour I will ever have in my life. I have no words to describe the feelings I have right now, but I do know I am currently filled with gratefulness and thankfulness. It was lovely to read that, and then she's come out onto the court and she's played like Naomi Osaka can play, Matt. I mean, her victories 6-1, 6-4 over Zhang Saisai, and then today 6-3, 6-2 over Victoria Golubic. I mean, they're not the worst draws in the world for her on a hard court, but even so, that was just a rewind to the Australian Open form, I think, and she looks right where she would want to be, form-wise at least.
Yeah, I think so. I think, look, the most important thing is that she seems to be okay, and she said she feels better and happier, and her tennis is fantastic. I've been really surprised by, maybe I shouldn't be, she is that good, but I've been surprised by the lack of rust. She has started the match against Zhang Shaisai hitting the ball like a dream, just taking over in the way that she can. And then in that second set, she was pushed a lot more and just stepped up exactly when she needed to in all the biggest moments. And then against Golubic overnight, was very tight through the first set. It was, you know, it was a close match. And then she surged ahead at the end of the first set and kept it going in the second set. Sort of these Naomi Osaka trademarks that we've become so used to. It just looks like she's back on a hard court, which is where she's separated herself from everyone else over the last few years. And she's so determined. There is a hint of what she had going on at the US Open last year, playing for something bigger. And there's this on a mission vibe to her. And when she plays like that, she's pretty unstoppable. So, you know, this is looking great. I'm well aware that she's playing again tonight, and this will be out-of-date tennis news in a few hours. But at the time of recording, this is my take, and I stand by it.
Who is it for her now?
Marketa Vondroušová.
Oh, yes, I did see that. And I remember thinking at the time, I'd love to see that match on clay, but I don't feel that Vondroušová is going to be able to handle what's coming at her in that match. That's going to be hilarious, isn't it, when people are listening to this after the big news that's broken overnight of Osaka out. Anyway, we'll find out. Talking of somebody who is out, Ash Barty is out, and the Wimbledon champion lost in straight sets. This is a match that I saw quite a bit of against Sara Cerebes Tormo, who's backed it up and beaten Fiona Ferro. I mean, it's one of those that I think people who haven't followed tennis really closely in the last few months and over the last year would see that as just an almighty upset of the highest order. And I know that a couple of people in my family said, well, who's Sara Cerebes Tormo? And I do get that. But I think having seen what we saw at Wimbledon and various other points during the year, she's a really, really good player. What surprised me was how she seemed to turn the tables on Barty and play her almost at her own game. She just kept on slicing cross court with her own backhand. And by the end, Barty was trying to punch holes through the defences with her two-hander. And it was quite an arresting sight to see Barty go that route. And she was having some success, but it struck me that she'd basically lost that territorial battle of giving into and somebody else's sliced backhand. But still, I'm still surprised when she was a set and a breakdown, she started to play like a dream, Barty. I'm really surprised that she didn't take over at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly a tough draw for her. And I think, as you said, it's a result which makes a lot more sense if you know about Sara Cerebes Tormo and how much she's improved this year. And also, frankly, if you've followed some of Ash Barty's tournaments this year, she has struggled occasionally in first round matches. I think of Miami, I think of Wimbledon. She wasn't particularly sharp through the first few rounds there. She has been vulnerable in first rounds, and she's often got through them. But Sara Sribas-Tormo was too good not to capitalize on that. And as you said, she was brilliant tactically. She combines this really low knifed slice that you mentioned, David, with a really opposite forehand, which is loaded with topspin. You know, they're just opposite shots to have to face. And I think that can be confusing for opponents. And look, I don't want to necessarily compare Ash Barty's situation to other Grand Slam champions, but I remember when Simona Halep won the French Open, and she told, you know, we knew what a big deal that was for her, what a dream it was for her to finally get a slam. Look, Barty told us it was her dream to win Wimbledon, and suddenly she's back in a really big event. I can imagine it being difficult to go again following Wimbledon. I can imagine that Wimbledon result might sustain her for a while. And I'm not saying a lack of motivation was the reason she lost this match, but it's a tricky thing to have to deal with, to back it up, I think, so soon.
She is still in the doubles, I would point out, with Storm Sanders, who stuck around at Wimbledon and was there in the players box when she won the title, which was a really nice touch. And, you know, Barty is a Grand Slam doubles champion. And I do think she's the sort of character for whom an Olympic gold/medal would kind of mean the same in singles.
Agreed.
And in doubles. So I think that's not insignificant at all that she's I think that's a couple of rounds now that she's won through in the doubles. Not quite sure who she plays next, but I'll be keeping an eye on Barty in the doubles. That would be a nice story.
I think the other thing to just mention as well is there are no fans. And it is really jarring after full houses at Wimbledon through several days and loads of noise and a feeling of almost normality to then go to this.
Yeah. And Barty hasn't had much experience of that, bar, I think, maybe a couple of rounds at the Australian Open. Did she lose when there were no fans? I can't actually remember whether she lost at the Australian Open when there were no fans. There was a period in the middle of the tournament where Melbourne went into lockdown, and I can't remember, but that would, I think, been her only experience pretty much of playing without fans. I think pretty much most of the other tournaments she would have played, there have been at least some.
It's also really interesting to having the completely direct comparison of how tennis without fans compares to other sports without fans. I mean, you're literally switching from one feed to another, from one sport to another, multi-screening. And I think tennis suffers on average more.
I agree.
Totally.
Than other sports without fans.
Was amazing without fans because the teams are making so much noise.
Exactly, and it's really interesting because I've found, I think pretty much unanimously, indoor tennis without fans has been the worst. That echo, that hollow, echoey sound. But actually some of the indoor sports have fared better, I think, in the Olympics without sound. I mean, the swimming hasn't been as bad as I feared because the few people that are there, the teammates, the volunteers, the acoustics actually really amplify the sound that they are making and create something of an atmosphere. My instinct is the athletics is really going to suffer from lack of fans, but that doesn't start till next week, so we'll see. I think the gymnastics, brilliant as it's been, I still have been absorbed by it, but I do think that suffers a bit from lack of fans. But tennis suffers as much as any,
yeah.
I think, really does.
Especially in one of these really cavernous bowls of hard court tournament. And I think this is particularly jarring. And also with that sleepy heat as well. You can see how the players are slowed down. There's no energy in the stadium. There's no energy in them. They're trying to pace themselves, conserve, and I totally get it. But I do think in that way it's kind of made for Djokovic in terms of being able to pace himself.
These conditions aren't made for Djokovic.
No.
I'm in no way suggesting he's not going to win the gold medal. I really think he is. But he does not like this vibe at all. You know, it's his one tiny, tiny bit of kryptonite, isn't it?
Yeah. And actually, we'll come back to the rest of the women's draw in a minute, but actually just thinking about his victories so far, Hugo Delien and then today against Jean-Lenard Struff, which was 4-all first set, when I referenced to you both, oh, look, it's 4-all first set. And within about 3 minutes, it was 6-4, 2-love. But he now faces Alejandro Davidovic Fokina, who I kind of feel will bring his own energy and will maybe not mind the conditions too much. So it'll be a totally different type of battle against someone like that than it was against Struff. So very interested to see how that ends up going.
I saw a little bit of Davidovic Fokina today. He beat John Millman, which I thought was an impressive win given everything we've talked about with the conditions, because John Millman is a guy who I think would back himself in those conditions against a lot of people on the ATP tour. And
beat Musetti in the first round?
He did, yeah. Mm. So he was in form and playing well, and Davidovic Fokina was a setup and probably should have finished it in two, and it went to a third set, so he had to go again, and it was just an impressive win. I think I have seen him play Djokovic, and it wasn't particularly pretty. I think he's practiced with Djokovic quite a lot, and Djokovic seems to know his game. I think he perhaps reads some of the crazier elements in his game better than people who maybe don't know him. I will be interested to see that. I think just with Djokovic, what I'm finding interesting, and it's something that always gets me at the Olympics, is just what a big star he is in the Olympic Village. I've seen so many athletes getting selfies with him, and he was asked about that in his press conference, and he said, yeah, people have been coming up to me asking me for some advice, and, you know, I've been happy to give it. And, you know, I think so often tennis players are big stars at the Olympics, and, you know, there's obviously other ones as well, but I think without Federer, without Nadal there, without Serena, Djokovic is the guy. And
I think he probably really enjoys that, and I think that's great that he really enjoys it.
Gives, you know, him a chance, good, really,
good,
doesn't
for
it?
Him.
Gives him a chance to be the man.
Be the man,
without,
yeah.
Without anybody else around, getting the inevitable attention because of their longevity in the sport and the rest of it.
There was the picture of him doing the splits with some gymnasts, wasn't there? Which was, I mean, it was great. It was really great.
I love that about the Olympics.
And I love that he loves that. Exactly. Mm. I love people that understand that is a beautiful thing about the Olympics. Mm. And I love that that's still a thing at this Olympics. I worried that because of all the restrictions and everything, there just wouldn't be any of that. And there's less of it than there otherwise would be, but it still exists. Mm. And that warms my heart.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So Davidovich Fokina for him next to try to get into the quarterfinals. I'm going to just backtrack again up the agenda because Matt's just laid out this marvellous agenda that I've just completely jumped hoops through in order
Matt
to get
and his
to
Olympic agendas.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll tell you, this has become a thing, everybody. If you're not following us on Twitter, now would be a good time. If not for Hannah during Grand Slams, for Matt's daily Olympics plan, which I have just been following with every single moment of every day.
I thought everyone did it.
No, this is where Matt digests every single bit of Olympic information for the day and distills it into a little itinerary of watching. And it works to perfection. And I've been just following it. And I've been posting it on our social media channels. So you can too be like Matt.
I haven't done that, Matt, but I can tell you that the last time I bought a physical edition of the Radio Times, which for international listeners is it's a TV guide. It's a magazine TV guide. It's the sort of definitive TV guide in the UK, always was for the Rio Olympics. And I circled and highlighted things. And if I weren't working this Olympics and my schedule weren't decided for me, I would have purchased this Radio Times, which is frankly an inferior version of Matt's daily schedule.
Well, I was going to say, you've given away my secret.
Oh, do you get it from the Radio Times?
Well, the Radio Times spread is excellent, and then I distill that into my little itinerary.
He's one-upped the Radio Times.
The Radio Times will be employing Matt this time in 4 years.
But I think it comes from the tennis fan in me. I'm used to having lots of sport going on simultaneously that I want to watch and an order of play and circling and kind of chronicling what I want to watch in a given day. It just makes sense, doesn't it?
Okay. Well, on it today was Carla Suarez Navarro as part of the tennis schedule, and she ended up being beaten by Karolina Pliskova, but not before winning a 7-6 second set. I mean, quite extraordinary that she followed her win over Ons Jabeur in the opening round by really pushing the runner-up at Wimbledon to a third set.
And she's still in the doubles with Garbiñe Muguruza.
Yeah.
And I love those two together.
Yes.
Mm. That
reminds me of kind of happier days for Muguruza as well, when they used to be a partnership. I think it's good for her too.
Yeah, absolutely.
They
make me happy.
And Van Uytvanck, who incidentally defeated Petra Kvitova today, which was a bit of a shock.
Flag bearer Petra Kvitova, probably tennis's highest profile flag bearer at the opening ceremony. Tennis usually is very well represented in terms of flag bearers. It was obviously a depleted athlete presence at the opening ceremony this time around, and you did, or my take on it was that a lot of the medal contender athletes actually didn't march in the athlete parade at the opening ceremony because of the COVID risk. I think the federations perhaps wanted to wrap them up in cotton wool. You know, with all due respect to the two that carried the flag for Team GB, a lot of people were expecting it to be Adam Peaty or Helen Glove or someone like that. But no, it was slightly lower profile athletes, and the sort of real medal contenders weren't there. But Petra Kvitova did carry the flag for the Czech Republic, and even through the mask, you could just see the just absurd grin on her face. It was wonderful. It was electric. Really, really lovely. Maybe that was enough for her. I don't know. I didn't see any of the loss to Van Uytvanck.
She struggled
in humidity a lot in the past. She actually struggles with her breathing, doesn't she? I've seen it at altitude.
She's an asthmatic, I think, isn't she?
Yeah, she struggles in... Well, I mean, she's I think she's won three times in Madrid, but I've also seen her really struggle in Madrid with the altitudinous conditions and humidity as well. Really sort of looks like something's kind of sitting on her chest. So perhaps we shouldn't be that surprised, but I'm really pleased she had that honour and that moment.
Yeah. We had Donna Vekic today knocking out Aryna Sabalenka, the third seed, in a deciding set tiebreaker, a match which I tuned in late on due to my the Croatian half of my family, frankly. My wife's Croatian, my kids are basically half Croatian, and they were all going wild for Donna Vekic's win. Another disappointment for Sabalenka, though, and I mean, I know she doesn't look that comfortable in the heat, but still, you know, it's a disappointment for her.
I love that in a multinational household, you get double the Olympic fun.
Oh, yeah,
you get two nations to support. I'm very envious of that.
Yeah.
Note to self, find man, find international man in order to double Olympic fun.
Can't tell you, though, that the taekwondo final involving the Briton and the Croatian...
Oh, crikey, yes.
Causes issues. So, anyway.
You'll we'll take the on. Rough with the smooth, though.
Yeah, all right. Paula Badosa today beat Iga Świątek in two sets. Blooming close match, this was. A lot closer than straight set sounds. It was... I was kind of across it at the end. Matt, you I think you watched pretty much the whole thing. Or at least you seemed... Every time I tried to alert anybody to anything, Matt said, yeah, but Badosa and Świątek. and then poor old Iga, after she lost, was just sobbing, weeping into her towel for a good 10 minutes afterwards, sitting on her courtside chair. And a really warm embrace from Badosa, who could tell? Who could tell how much that was hurting her? And she was obviously that mixture of joy herself, but also feeling really bad for her opponent too. And I couldn't 100% tell whether the conditions were to blame as well as the occasion and the disappointment. It's, you know, I wouldn't like to hazard too much of a guess. I haven't heard quotes from her to explain, but it was an upsetting sight to witness it as well, Matt. I mean, I think... It's upsetting to see anybody in that state, but also somebody that everybody likes as much as Świątek. It was particularly hard to witness.
Yeah, it's as tough as anyone has taken a loss that I can remember. Really, I mean, there's obviously numerous Tsitsipas examples, and I think of Goran and his plate at Wimbledon, but this
Andy Murray,
yeah, but I mean, this will stick with me as you know, it was a good 10 minutes she was on the court for, and because of the lack of fans, you could hear the sobbing, you could feel it coming through the screen. It was really quite tough to watch. I thought Badosa was brilliant. I'm so impressed with how she's backed up the French Open.
Hello, Spanish speakers' pronunciation.
Badosa.
All right, I'm going to correct myself going forward then. Good. Thanks, Matt.
Just slip that in there.
He just throws it in.
But yeah, I'm just impressed with how she's backed up the French Open and her breakthrough on clay. You know, she reached the semi-final in Madrid, which was a big deal for her. Quarterfinals at Roland Garros. And then, honestly, I did wonder whether we might not see her as a real top presence again until the next clay season. But she had a good Wimbledon, and now she's just beaten Iga Świątek at the Olympics. She's a relevant force on kind of all surfaces, it feels like now. She's really...
got a great appetite, hasn't she?
Totally, and a great game. She's better than I thought she was, and I really like it when a player makes me feel like that.
Yeah. Talking of other people that are in really good form, just mark the card. Maria Sakkari, who's beaten Annette Kontaveit in round one into round three very convincingly, and Barbora Krejcikova. No great surprise there because she's been doing it for months. She's just been sweeping opponents aside. I think it was Leila Fernandez today who'd had a good first round win. Well, Krejcikova was having none of that. And Muguruza is still going strong as well. So those are the people that are going to be featuring over the next few days, one suspects, and maybe gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal winners over the next week. So that's the women's draw. In the men's side, aside from Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray was unable to play singles, very sadly, but he is still in the doubles. He actually played doubles on the first day that we were watching, and it was a victory alongside Joe Salisbury against Pierre Hugobert and Nicolas Mahut. And they were fantastic in that match, were Murray and Salisbury. I mean, it was not close. It was, what, 6-2, 6-3, something like that. And, I mean, I did see a suggestion that maybe Mahut wasn't 100% fit, but even so, this was an absolute demolition job. And I mean, Murray's got a thigh strain. Let's hope for his sake that he can cover his half of the court and still be effective.
Mm. Yeah, they were brilliant. That was their first ever professional match together. And, you know, bearing in mind Andy Murray has played men's doubles at the last two Olympics with brother Jamie, who they can be brilliant together. They've won a Davis Cup together, pairing up most of the time in the doubles. But they have not been brilliant on those occasions at the Olympics that they've played together, because they've sort of been thrown together at last minute, seemingly with no preparation, and have looked kind of all at sea on the court together and lost first round, I think, in both Olympics. So although Joe Salisbury, obviously brilliant doubles player, Andy Murray, brilliant player, full stop, and doubles at the moment suited to whatever physical impairment he might have at the moment, sort of in theory I can see it working. I worried that, you know, just throwing them together with no preparation just wouldn't work, and they were brilliant. They were really, really brilliant. And I'm obviously sad about Mahubert. Really, really sad. It was a very trying match to watch and to know what to do with my emotions, because I wanted everyone on the court to win, and that simply wasn't possible. Yeah, I mean, that's the second seeds that they've dumped out in the first round. And yeah, massive. Pumped Andy Murray in doubles is one of my favourite tennis sights. I'd forgotten it from that wonderful run he had with Feliciano Lopez at Queens a couple of years ago. Just Andy Murray acting like a doubles match on a Monday, or whenever it was, a Saturday on this occasion, wasn't it? But is the biggest thing that there's ever been in his career, as if three Grand Slam singles titles, you know, that's nothing compared to this first round doubles match. It is an energy that I love. I love it.
Mm. Well, yeah. How did Joe Salisbury take all this, Catherine?
I would say he took it on board. He didn't. he played really well. He didn't sort of reflect it back at Andy Murray, I would say. That it's, they're a good foil to one another.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. I would imagine that. Could you imagine Murray and Evans? Oh, my God. Anyway, there might be some sort of chemical explosion on the court if that happened. By the way, I just on the last time they played doubles together at the Olympics, Murray and Murray, I remember how disappointing they were, I think in 08 maybe, or maybe it was 12, I can't exactly remember.
They played 12 and 16.
The 16 match they played, I've just looked it up because I remember watching this, and actually I think that they played quite well, but they played Thomas Bellucci and Andre Sarr, which is suddenly like one of the best scratch pairs I've ever seen. And they won 7-6, 7-6, including a 16-14 tiebreak, which I remember thinking, how are the Murrays losing this? But anyway, they did. That's 5 years ago.
And speaking of tough doubles draws at the Olympics, Mo and Herbert have played two, and they've lost in round one both times. Obviously, this was a tough draw. They had Cabal and Farah in Rio in the first round. Oh. And, you know, I mean,
they deserve better.
2024.
Well, that's the thing. It's in Paris. It's at Roland Garros. They've won there
my
twice.
God, don't.
Maybe.
Could you imagine?
Maybe that is going to be their time.
Will be 40.
Yeah, he'll be 40, I think.
Doable, yeah. I'd say.
I think so, yeah.
Mahut will be sobbing before he goes out there.
Oh, my. Okay.
Anyway.
I'm all about that happening.
You've got 4 years to build up to it. 3 years.
Three.
There's something very tantalising about a chase to become complete. Mm. We've got lots of them going on in tennis at the moment.
Yes.
And Maroon Air Bears is a big part of that. It's an interesting one.
And Roland Garros is the tennis venue for the 2024 mm-hmm. Paris Games. Okay, completely sold.
Well,
that's
I'll tell
happening.
You, somebody who hasn't got a chase on at the moment is Felix Auger-Aliassime, because he lost to Max Purcell after Andy Murray was removed from his path.
Yeah. This is how hard tennis predictions are. The winner of the first round match between Andy Murray and Felix Auger-Aliassime was Max Purcell.
Well done, but...
Who only got into the Olympics because Alex de Minaur tested positive for COVID and only got into the singles draw because Andy Murray pulled out about 4 hours before the match.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good effort from him,
isn't it? Max Purcell fans won't enjoy this podcast, but it's definitely a dodgy loss, that, isn't it?
He's now out, Max Purcell.
He lost
6-3, 6-love to Dominic Kupfer. In the next round. But anyway, well done for beating. What is Auger-Aliassime doing there? I mean, Andy Murray must be thinking, oh, can't believe this. I've got injured and now I could have beaten him. Anyway, is what he's probably thinking. So Kei Nishikori is also going strong. He beat Andrei Rublev. Stefanos Tsitsipas beat...
Nishikori's still in the doubles also.
And he apparently played really well, knocked out Murray and Skupski today.
I was trying to think of singles players that I've seen less frequently play doubles than Nishikori. I can't think of one. I don't think I've ever seen or heard of Nishikori playing doubles.
No, I can't remember.
He's going to go and win the gold medal now, isn't he, in the doubles?
Well, it's a good win, isn't it, over Rublev. And Tsitsipas beat Kohlschreiber, but not without a bit of trouble. I mean, he lost a set and I think he was a breakdown in the decider before he got his act together.
The movement was in serious jeopardy.
Matt was monitoring the movement's issues.
If Kei Nishikori had beaten Rublev, which he did, and Tsitsipas had lost to Kohlschreiber, I mean, the movement would have been over. It would have been in tatters. Tsitsipas has single-handedly saved the movement by winning
over.
That final set.
It's very final, Matt.
You can't lose to Philip Kohlschreiber in 2021.
No, and I think part of the problem is how old he looks.
I know my daughter walked in, she had no idea who he is, and she goes, who is he? He looks ancient. Like, that is brutal, especially as some people have compared his hair to mine.
He just looks his age, doesn't he? Whereas most sort of slightly ageing tennis players seem to defy age. But Philip Kohlschreiber really looks like a man approaching his 40s.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. He played well, though. Good win
he
for
did.
Him. Oh, good performance by him before Tsitsipas got his act together. Tsitsipas needs to get his head back on. I think that's part of it. He's taken that off and gone the sort of...
He's half
Hugebert,
up. He looks,
Pierre Hugebert style.
He looks on the way to a man bun.
Mm. He's got to get through this slightly debatable phase.
It's awkward.
Just get your bloody headband back on. Anyway... Right, Daniil Medvedev, we talked about him. He won through both of his first two matches, so he's still going strong. Marin Cilic won a match against João Menezes on his 11th match point. What else happened in that match, Matt? Because it was a bit of a roller coaster.
It was, I mean, even by Marin Cilic standards, he managed to make it torturous and unnecessarily complicated. I mean, actually, he was a set and 5-3 down and then won 9 games in a row to be 5-love up in the final set. 40-love up in that game. And along the way in that set, he had 10 match points that he didn't take, double faulted on one of them. And he eventually won it on his 11th match point in the tiebreak, having saved a match point himself. It was totally bonkers tennis match, and by the end the quality was terrible, and yet I couldn't look away. It was absolutely engrossing. Who is going to win this match? Neither of them could finish it off. It was compelling.
Yeah, it was all a waste of time in the end because he ended up losing his next match to Pablo Carreño Busta.
Did not win today.
Yeah. Correct. He lost in three sets to Carreño Busta. So that happened. In the men's doubles, the top seeds Nikola Mektić and Mate Pavic won. A bit of a close one against Lorenzo Musetti and Sonego.
Mm, that was fascinating. I just was checking the scores and noticed that had gone to a match tiebreak, which they play in the third set of the doubles. And it was classic doubles players versus singles players because Mektić and Pavic just took up their positions at the net. And Musetti and Sonego chose the baseline for their battleground. And could they hit topspin passing shots past Mektić and Pavic? That was basically every rally. And no was the answer. Mektić and Pavic were so solid at the net and so pumped to win that. That is a really big win for them. You know, this year, I think they've teamed up because of the Olympics. And they've been sort of sweeping all before them in men's doubles, and if they'd gone out to a couple of singles players, I think that would have really hurt. So that's a big deal for them that they're still in this draw.
Yeah. Also, big news in the women's doubles in that Belinda Bencic and Victoria Golubic beat Aoyama and Shibahara, who have been one of the teams of the year. So that's a heck of a win.
Yeah, one of the teams of the year for whom, obviously, this Games was where they were aiming to peak. Yeah. I mean, losing in the first round is not... I realise this is really niche. They're total double specialists, but that's a massive upset. Massive, massive loss. Like, a really Olympic-y result, that. Obviously, in the host nation, I really feel for them.
Mm. And there's been some massive news elsewhere on the regular tour that we should just bring you up to date with, because Catherine Whittaker and myself have both had victories in the predictions. I suppose I should also tell you about the first time title wins for Cameron Norrie and Carlos Alcaraz, which led to those prediction wins, but the points that we won are really what matter here, Catherine, aren't they? Let's be honest. Catherine picked...
Yeah, I had a glorious sort of 18 hours when my prediction was correct before my thunder was stolen.
Yep. Delighted. And I got more points than you did as well. So I've had a net gain of 10 on you, which I'm delighted about.
So, if I wasn't so tired, I would put a lot more effort into describing exactly how irritated I am by that.
Her face is a picture right now, I can tell you. Cameron Norrie is the person that Catherine said would win the title in Los Cabos. And given he'd never won a title before, despite having all these finals, it's quite a good pick, I've got to say, Catherine. So well done. 45 points, didn't drop a set all week long. And in fact, he just swept everybody aside. He was really good, Matt. And I've heard some people say, there you go, it shows that Norrie's decision to not play the Olympics has paid off. And yet there's still a part of me that's thinking, he could have been doing this at the Olympics.
Yeah, I think for him it would have paid off. I think the reason he's not played the Olympics was because he maybe felt like he could get this first title and get that monkey off his back, and he could improve his ranking, and he's done both of those things. So I think he has certainly accomplished what he set out to achieve by not going to the Olympics. I think he also views it as longer term preparation for the rest of his American hardcourt season. He's up to 12 in the race, Cameron Norrie. He is having an incredible year. I mean, we're looking at most likely a top 20 player next year, Cameron Norrie. And for him to be doing that with his game just says everything about his attitude and his approach to tennis and his desire to wring everything out of what he's got. He's a credit. He's the sort of player that everyone coming through should be looking at and replicating what he's doing. It's really impressive.
He could be in Turin.
He might be in Turin. I mean, it feels like a stretch, but maybe.
Stranger things have happened.
If the ATP had a Zhuhai, he'd be there, but they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure the WTA has a Zhuhai.
P.S. The ATP should have a Zhuhai. Everyone should have a Zhuhai. It's a great idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just put it before the finals.
Yes.
So we've discussed that. Quite right. My moment of massive triumph was the victory of Carlos Alcaraz, 6-2, 6-2 over Richard Gasquet in the UMAG final, which is a tournament that means a lot to me, having gone there for the first time in 1998 as a very green communications manager, and then met my wife 2 years later whilst carrying out the same job. It's a lovely place, a real holiday destination, and on the subject of playing matches late at night in order to avoid the heat, they start matches in UMAG at 5 p.m., which is...
Same in Los Cabos, I think.
Most splendid, I have to say. Another chap who just can't be stopped, frankly, on clay is Casper Ruud, who I think that's a couple of titles in as many weeks, isn't it? He's won the Gachard title, beaten Hugo Gaston. And I mean, it's not that big a surprise because he feels almost like the next one in the clay court stakes. And given he's playing these tournaments that are not that deep in terms of draws, he's just mopping up the wins. So well done to him.
I was going to say, I'm pleased to see Hugo Gaston get to the final. You know, I found him really thrilling at Roland Garros last year when he beat Wawrinka and pushed team to five sets. And I think it's taken him a little while to build on that, but he did that this week. He had a good win against Christian Garin, and he's just got a lovely game, lovely court sense and craft. And I think clay is probably the surface which brings that out. So pleased to see him doing well.
Yeah, me too. A great story on the WTA circuit as well with Danielle Collins winning her first title, the Palermo final. She beat Elena Gabriela Rus, who had been on a 12-match winning streak. Great little bit of insight from somebody, one of our listeners who watched this match, Sam, who's at Amigate House on Twitter. Always a really good contributor on Twitter, I think. And Sam has said, watched Collins Rus, good contest, loads of drama, rough looking injury that Collins showed zero sympathy for. And then they both referenced previous aggro from Hamburg in their speeches. Great fun, worth watching the highlights. Rus can go far, has a top 50 game and top 10 charisma. Now, that is a good report. So
great,
thank you very
report.
Much for that.
I've also just seen the pictures of Danielle Collins with her trophy in Palermo, and they just love it. She's beaming. I hadn't quite computed the fact that she hadn't won a WTA title before. You know, Grand Slam semi-finalists, you sort of just assume that they have. And that accounts for her sheer joy in those photos. They're lovely. Really joyful.
And also, given everything we know from the piece that Simon Briggs did with her earlier this year about the awful struggle she's had with endometriosis, which, you know, she has managed to continue playing despite and having great success. So absolutely fantastic to see. So that brings to a close this edition of the Tennis Podcast. We're going to be back again on Thursday and thereafter daily until the end of the Olympics, because things are going to get really hot and heavy from the quarterfinals onwards with loads and loads of exciting matches to look forward to. So we're going to be coming to you daily from Thursday. We have had a win this week, Rogue, so I'm sure you're proud of me. I'm proud of you. Catherine's delighted with Zeus. Scousel Mousel's not talking to Matt after his Christian Garin debacle. Billie Jean, I haven't seen sight nor sound of Billie Jean in this edition of the podcast. So, Billie Jean King, I don't know what she's up to. Catherine, anything?
She's on holiday in Cornwall.
Oh, is she?
With my brother.
Oh, how lovely.
Having
how lovely.
Just far too good a time. She's in ecstasy.
Okay. Well, our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee. This week, he is also our weekly mascot owner. And I'm looking at a lovely picture of his two cats.
Oh.
Is it Haida?
Are they friends?
They look friendly.
Animals being friends is my favourite thing.
They're having a hug, Catherine. Oh. They're having a hug, the two cats. We're going to post this on our social media and in our newsletter, which you can subscribe to if you click on the link in your show notes on your phone straight after listening to this. How do we pronounce the names of these two cats, Matt?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot, David. I don't know. Haida and Soma, or Soma, perhaps.
Yeah.
What I do know is that they were adopted and they live in the Netherlands. And an extra bit of information, which I know Catherine's going to like, is Chris told me that they like sort of surfing around on Chris's robot Hoover.
Oh, wow.
Hello.
How cool is that?
Billie Jean has a very
different reaction.
Well, a very mixed relationship with my robot Hoover. I feel like she wants to be friends, but she's also afraid.
It's a work in progress. I nearly ran out the room when I saw it. I'd never seen one before. Well, your cats are lovely, Chris. So thanks ever so much for bringing them into our world, and thank you for all your support as always. Thank you to all of you for listening. We wouldn't bother without you. So thank goodness you're here, and do tell as many people as you possibly can about the existence of the Tennis Podcast, so that we can grow our audience. We will be back on Thursday with another edition, and we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.